You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 216 by Rudolf Steiner. 8 lectures entitled Supersensible Impulses in the Historical Development of Humanity, held in Dornach from the 16th of September to the 1st of October 1922, translated by Paul King. Lecture 1, given in Dornach on the 16th of September 1922. Things to do with the spiritual world can be expressed in different ways and elucidated from different angles. They then sometimes sound disparate, but it is precisely through these varied elucidations that facts about the spiritual world can be presented in a complete form to the soul. And so this evening, I will bring, in a somewhat different language and different elucidation, certain things that I discussed in the last two lectures given in the Goetheanum concerning human experience between death and a new birth. We have heard that when our physical body falls away, the human being goes over into a condition of cosmic experience. After separating from the physical body, we still carry our etheric organism with us, but we no longer feel ourselves to be inside this etheric organism. We feel our soul spread out into the widths of the cosmos. However, we cannot yet distinguish with any clarity the beings and processes from each other in these widths of the cosmos, over which our consciousness now begins to expand. We have a cosmic consciousness, but this consciousness still lacks inner clarity. And in addition, this consciousness is initially absorbed during the first few days after death in the etheric body, which is still present. The first thing to be lost is what in the human being is tied to our head system, Kopforganisation. I'm not being ironic, but completely serious, when I say that the very first thing we lose, also in a soul sense, when we pass through the portal of death, is our head. The head system ceases to function. Now, it is precisely the head system that facilitates our thinking in earthly existence. It is by means of the head system that people form their thoughts in a certain activity during earthly existence. The head system is lost when we step through the portal of death, but our thoughts are not. Our thoughts remain. But they are permeated by a certain inner, in quotes, aliveness. They become dim, indistinct spiritual entities that direct us out into the widths of the cosmos. It is as though the thoughts had separated away from the human head, as though they still cast a backward light on the life just lived, which we experience as our etheric organism, but as though at the same time they were pointing us toward the widths of the cosmos. We do not yet know what they want to tell us, these human ideas, that were yoked and penned up in the head system, but are now freed and pointing to the widths of the cosmos. When, for the reasons and in the way I described yesterday in the Goetheanum building, the etheric body has dispersed, when our cosmic consciousness is no longer tied by it to our last earthly life, parenthesis, in the other way which I described, it initially remains tied, close parenthesis, when the etheric body has now also separated from the human being, then the thoughts, which have torn free from the head system, become brighter, as it were. And we now notice how these ideas are pointing us into the cosmos, into the universe. The way it works initially is that we go out into the universe through the mediation of the plant world. Please do not misunderstand me here. I am not saying that it is the plants covering the earth at the place where we die that prepare the way for us. But when we look at the earth's plant world, how it presents itself to our spiritual gaze is such that what our physical eyes see is only a part of the plant world. I will draw what happens in a diagram on the board, and there's a drawing. Assume that this is the surface of the earth, and plants are growing out of this surface. Of course, it's not drawn in proportion, but you will understand what I mean. We can follow these plants with our senses up to when they flower. But spiritual perception of plants shows that this is only part of the plant world, and that from the flower upward, there begins a weaving of processes of an astral nature. There is an astral element that is as though poured out over the earth, and spiral-shaped structures arise from this astrality. Wherever the earth makes it possible for plants to grow, the plants evoke a streaming out of these astral spirals. These cosmic spirals surround the earth everywhere, so that we mustn't think that this streaming down, this glittering and gleaming of the cosmic astral spirals, only occurs in places where plants grow. It is present in various ways everywhere. So someone might die in the desert, and yet, as they flow out into the universe, still be able to meet these plant spirals. The plant spirals are the path along which we move from the earth to the planetary sphere. Thus, by means of the spiritual extensions of the earth's plant world, we slip, as it were, out of the earthly realm. These become wider and wider. The spirals broaden out more and more, their circles becoming ever more expansive. They are our route out into the spiritual world. But we would not be able to go there. We would always have to remain stationary, as it were, if we did not receive the possibility of having, in quotes, negative weights of a sort. Weights that don't pull downward, but push us upward. And these weights are the spiritual content, the ideas of the mineral structures in the earth, particularly the metals. So, we move along the courses of the plants into the widths of the cosmos and are supported by the force of the earth's metals that carries us toward the planets. The quality of each mineral structure is such that its intrinsic idea always carries us to a particular planet. So we would say, for example, that minerals related to tin, that is, their ideas, carry us to a specific planet. That what is in the earth as iron, that is, the idea of iron, carries us to another specific planet. Thus, in their spiritual counter-images, the mineral and plant worlds that play a role for human beings in their environment during earthly existence undertake after death to conduct human beings into the widths of the cosmos. And we are truly carried into the movements of the planets, into the whole rhythm of planetary movement, by the mineral and plant kingdoms of the earth. By our consciousness gradually expanding over the whole planetary system, so that we are aware of this planetary life in the inner world of our own soul, we float through the entire planetary system. We're nothing else there but what pours forth into the widths from plant and mineral existence. We would experience in it everything that can be experienced in the mysteries of the plant and mineral kingdoms. And these mysteries are extraordinarily varied. They are great and stupendous, rich in content. And no one need believe that the life that now begins for the soul spiritual person, once they have left their physical organism, is poorer than day-to-day life on earth. It is manifold, but it is also majestic. We can experience more in the mysteries of a single mineral than we experience in earthly life in all the kingdoms of nature put together. But there is something else in this planetary sphere that we wander through. There are moon forces, the spiritual moon forces that we described a few days ago. The moon sphere is there. But the more we live into existence beyond the earth, the weaker its influence becomes. Its influence is strong in the early period after death, which is to be reckoned in years. It becomes ever weaker the more our cosmic consciousness expands. If this moon sphere were not present, there are two things we would not be able to experience after death. The first is the entity I referred to recently. We have constructed this ourselves in the life just lived out of the forces comprising the moral and spiritual evaluation of our earthly life. We have constructed a spiritual entity, a kind of spiritual elemental being whose limbs, whose tentacle-like structures are a reflection of our human moral spiritual worth. If I may put it like this, the soul is accompanied by a living photograph formed by the substance of the astral cosmos, but which is real and, in quotes, alive, a photograph in which we see what sort of person we actually were in our last life on earth. We have this photograph before us for as long as we are in the moon sphere. But apart from this, we also experience, in the moon sphere, all kinds of elemental beings. We soon notice that these beings have a kind of dream consciousness, but a very bright dream consciousness, which alternates with a brighter state of consciousness, even brighter than human consciousness on earth. These beings alternate, as it were, between a dull, dreamlike state of consciousness and a consciousness that is brighter than that of people on earth. We become acquainted with these beings. They are very numerous and differ considerably from each other in shape. In the condition of life after death I am describing, we see these beings as floating down to earth when they enter their dull, dreamlike consciousness, how they are pushed down to earth, as it were, by the spirituality of the moon, and how they float back again. We meet a rich life of these forms, floating down to earth and then back again, as I have described. We come to recognize that there is a relationship between these forms and the animal kingdom on earth. We come to recognize that these figures are the so-called group souls of the animals. These animal group souls come down. When this happens, it means that a particular animal species wakes up down on earth. When the animal species enters a condition of sleep, the group soul rises into the heights. In short, we notice that the animal kingdom stands in relationship with the cosmos such that the moon sphere is the life field for the group souls of animals. Animals do not have individual souls. Whole groups of animals, that is, species, lions, tigers, cats, etc., have common group souls. These group souls lead their existence in the moon sphere, moving up and down. And the life of animals is influenced from the moon sphere in this alternation of up and down. It is simply a cosmic law that we have our moral astral counter image in the sphere where we encounter the animal group souls, in other words, in the moon sphere. For when we live further with our cosmic consciousness into broad expanses of the cosmos, we leave behind in the moon sphere this living photograph, as I have described, of where we have got to as a moral spiritual being during our last earthly life and lives before that. In this way, experiencing the plant, mineral, and animal worlds, we enter the planetary sphere. We are still engaged in the moon sphere, but in this way we find our course into the planetary sphere. We experience the movement of the planets. We have stepped out into the cosmos along the courses of the plant being. We are carried by the ideas of the minerals, particularly the being of the metals. We feel that a particular species of plant on the earth is an earthly reflection of what leads us to, say, Jupiter, along a spiral course that widens out more and more. But the fact that we are led to Jupiter is dependent upon our experiencing in great vividness the idea of a particular metal and particular minerals of the earth. Once we have been led along the plant paths to a planet, parenthesis, always taking with us the idea of the mineral element on the earth that has borne us out into the cosmos, close parenthesis. Once we have reached the planet in question, this idea of the minerals that has carried us and which has become increasingly vivid now begins to sound in the planet. So after death, we experience ourselves being led out on the paths of the plants. We experience the inner being of the minerals in ideas that become ever more vivid. These ideas become spiritual beings. When these livingly vivid ideas arrive at a planet, the one idea at one planet, another idea at another planet, these minerals that have become beings feel as though at home. One kind of mineral feels at home in Jupiter, another kind of mineral feels at home in Mars, and so on. And what was only regarded on Earth as commonplace, now having arrived at the planet in question, begins to sound and ring out in the most varied ways. So whereas on Earth we only had these mineral reflections as something we saw with our senses, we now hear them sounding forth from the interior of the planets. And in this way we find our way into the harmony of the spheres. For in the cosmos everything is inwardly connected. What here below grows out of the earth as the plant world is the reflection of what unites the earth with the planetary system, as though along paths of the plants. The mineral in the ground is actually an unassuming reflection of the force that pulls upward along the plant paths, but which has its home out there in the planets, and represents cosmic tones in the planets, which unite with each other into a great cosmic harmony. And it is a reality when we understand what is here on earth and say of gold, in gold that glitters with its unique color, I see the reflection of what causes a central cosmic tone to sound for my soul in the sun, once I have carried the idea of gold up to the sun along certain courses of the plants. When human beings have passed through this, when the necessary things I have been describing over the past few days have taken place, it then becomes possible for them to rise beyond the planetary sphere and enter the sphere of the fixed stars. They can only do this by wrenching themselves away from the moon sphere. In a certain sense, the moon sphere has to remain behind. But what they experience in the planetary sphere, as described, what they experience as the meaning of the mineral and metallic kingdom of the physical earth, what they experience as the guiding paths of the earth's plant world, all the great things they go through, this is darkened in a certain way by influences from the moon sphere. It is darkened for them in a certain way in that they experience the elementary beings of the animal kingdom, which alongside the fully harmonious vertical up and down movements in which they move, also have horizontal movements. In these horizontal movements carried out by the animal group souls within the moon sphere, all manner of terrible archetypes for disharmonious, discrepant forces are acted out in the animal kingdom. Terrible wild battles take place between the group souls of the animal kingdom. Through this impact of the moon sphere into the planetary sphere, what is otherwise experienced in inner calm and in a dignified and majestic way due to the archetypal nature of the plant and mineral kingdoms gets disturbed in a certain way. Once human beings have wrested themselves away from the moon sphere, a cosmic memory, as we may call it, remains for them of these stupendous, majestic experiences of the planetary sphere with its archetypal aspect of the mineral and plant kingdoms of the Earth. This remains with them as a memory, and they enter into a world of spiritual beings whose physical and sense-perceptible reflections, as I mentioned, are the constellations. They are the constellations which, if we understand them in the right way, are the expression, the script, as it were, by which we can experience the unique qualities, the deeds and will intentions of the spiritual beings in the stellar sphere. We, in quotes, see, in a certain way, spiritual beings who do not walk in physical bodies on the earth, but who can only be experienced in this sphere of stars. And we enter this sphere in order to imbue our being with cosmic consciousness. This cosmic consciousness has now expanded. Its spatial perception has changed into a qualitative perception. Its temporal perception has changed into simultaneity. We enter this sphere to imbue our own being with the deeds of these divine spiritual beings. Whereas, here on earth we are enclosed in our skin, and other people in their skin do whatever they have to do, whereas here on earth we are all juxtaposed. In this starry sphere, we as human beings are not only in one another, but our cosmic consciousness expands, and we feel the world of divine spiritual beings in ourselves as well. Here on earth we say we to ourselves, or rather we each say I to ourself. When we say I out there, what we mean is, what I experience within my I is the world of the divine spiritual hierarchies. I experience them as the content of my own cosmic consciousness. This, of course, is a still more stupendous, more expanded, more content-rich, and more majestic world of experience that we now enter. And when we become aware what forces are playing into our soul from the most diverse beings of the divine spiritual hierarchies, we realize that these are forces which act together and have cosmic intentions all aimed toward a point. With our own soul spiritual activity, we become woven into these intentions of the divine spiritual hierarchies and the individual beings within them. And everything we are woven into which is transferred our own cosmic activity, felt in our own interior, encompassed by cosmic consciousness, all this is aimed toward constructing the spirit seed, as I described, of the human physical organism. A saying in the ancient mysteries was indeed profound, that the human being is the temple of the gods. What is initially structured out of the spirit cosmos is stupendous, majestic greatness, and then contracts into the human physical body to become so transformed that we no longer recognize that this archetype, this mighty, majestic archetype, is actually shaped by the interrelationships of the divine spiritual hierarchies. A work which gives these interrelationships their goal. This sphere of experience is such that whereas while on earth we view it from an inner standpoint, centered in a point from which we look outward in all directions, we now view this sphere from outside. For when we enter the starry sphere, already the moment we tear ourselves away from the moon sphere, we feel we are out there in the universe and actually looking at the cosmos from outside. I can illustrate what happens in a diagram. Assume this here is the Earth. It is naturally not drawn to scale, but you will understand what is meant. We look out into the expanse of the cosmos. We see the movements of the planets and have the fixed stars out there. Our consciousness is here on the Earth as though contracted into a small point. We look out at the universe from a central point. The moment we escape from the moon sphere, we enter with our consciousness into the sphere of stars. But we only transit this starry sphere, as it were, led by the memory we have retained of our experiences in the planetary sphere, and then we enter into the sphere beyond the stars. In this sphere beyond the stars, space actually ceases to exist. Of course, in illustrating this, I have to draw spatially something that is actually principally qualitative. So I can draw it like this. While on Earth our consciousness is contracted as our eye into this point, when it reaches beyond the starry sphere, it is peripheral. From every point we are looking inward. In this spatial diagram, this way of perceiving is of course represented pictorially. If we have the constellation of Aries here, and from our perspective on the Earth we see the Sun in front of Aries, so that the Sun is covering Aries, as it were, and then we arrive in the universe, we then see Aries in front of the Sun. But being aware of perceiving with cosmic consciousness that Aries is in front of the Sun means something different from seeing the Sun in front of Aries with earthly consciousness. So in this way, from beyond the stars, we see everything spiritually. We look at the universe from outside. And in the work of elaborating the spirit seed of our physical organism, we actually have the forces of divine spiritual beings in us, but such that we basically feel ourselves outside the whole cosmos that we experience on Earth. And in our cosmic consciousness, we now experience that we exist together with divine spiritual beings. When we then look back and see the constellations, but qualitatively, not spatially, in front of the Sun, one constellation at one time and another at another time, we recognize in what we experience there, and which we connect with our memory of how, after we had passed along the paths of the plants, the metals, and minerals had sounded in the planets. We recognize and experience here how this sounding that was initially a cosmic music is translated into cosmic speech, into the Logos. We are able to read the intentions of the divine spiritual beings among whom we find ourselves by experiencing the signs of this cosmic script. Aries in front of the Sun, Taurus in front of the Sun, and so on. By experiencing how this comes about and how the notes that were sounded in the planets by the metals contribute sonically to this script. This instructs us on how to work on the spirit seed of our physical organism on Earth. All the time we are in the moon sphere, we have a vividly living feeling of the photograph of our earthly life from a moral, spiritual perspective. We have a living feeling of what is going on down there among the animal group souls. But these are beings of a demonic, elemental nature. Now that we find the zodiac on the far side of the Sun, as it were, we learn to recognize what we actually saw there. For this memory of animal forms, of these group soul forms of the animals, also remains with us even on the far side of the starry sphere, and we discover that these animal group souls, when put in terms of human language, are reflections, transformed into caricatures of the sublime forms that now imbue our cosmic consciousness on the other side of the starry sphere, as the beings of the divine spiritual hierarchies. So, we have the beings of the divine spiritual hierarchies beyond the starry sphere, and within the starry sphere, to the extent that it is permeated by what belongs to the moon sphere, we have the caricatures of divine spiritual beings in the group souls of the animals. Don't take it in an inferior sense when I say caricatures. What is a caricature from a human, humorous, artistic perspective is naturally something extremely trivial in comparison to the sublime caricature nature of the divine spiritual beings in the world of the moon sphere, which at the same time is the world of the group soul beings of the earth's animal kingdom. We owe an exceptional amount to the experiences we have in this sphere. I spoke about this a few days ago in a form more of ideas. Now I'll express it in a more imaginative form. Imagine the human being abiding up here. See illustration 2, page 10, red. So he is looking down. He has his own proper region in the perceptions of his soul's spiritual world beyond the sphere of the stars. This is the field of his present activity. Just as when one stands on a high mountain and has sunshine above and mist below, so in this cosmic experience, one has below one the whole heaving, battling group soul condition of the animals. That is in a state of rising and falling discrepancy and disharmony, but also of harmony. Like a mist of multiple shapes, it propagates this down below, expresses it there, below. And while gazing at the constellations, we see the intentions of the divine spiritual beings, while we read there what intentions the divine spiritual beings have, while in cosmic consciousness we learn to understand how actually this temple of the gods, this spirit seed of the physical body, has its mysteries, those mysteries that correspond to the existence of the pure world beyond the earth and beyond the moon, we also look down and see what is happening there in the spiritual element of the zodiacal sphere. And as though looking down from a sun-bathed mountain summit onto cloudy masses of mist below, we have an experience that we encapsulate in this cosmic thought. If, when you go down again, you do not take with you from this divine spiritual world all the strength with which you have permeated yourself, you will not come through the cloudy mist world of the animal group souls unscathed. You will find there an image of your previous lives on earth from a moral spiritual perspective. This will be swimming down there in the mist. You will have to pick it up once more. But all the group souls of the animals will be there, savagely lunging at one another. All the wild commotion will be there. You will have to take powers with you from your position beyond the starry sphere that are so strong that they enable you as much as possible to keep these forces of the animal group soul element away from your destiny. Otherwise, just as matter gathers on a crystal, what these animal group souls cosmically sweat out according to your moral spiritual core will attach itself to you. And you will have to take with you everything you are not able to hold back by means of the forces you gathered beyond the starry sphere, and you will have to incorporate this into yourself as all sorts of drives and instincts in your next life. To be sure, we will only be able to extract the forces from beyond the sphere of stars if we have made ourselves capable of this extraction by having developed in ourselves a leaning toward Christ, a leaning toward the mystery of Golgotha, to permeating our soul, not in an egotistical religious way, but in a truly religious way, in the sense of the words of St. Paul, "Not I, but Christ in me." Beyond the sphere of the stars, and as we live with divine spiritual beings, this gives us strength to permeate ourselves with forces. Then, as we descend through the moon sphere, these forces hold back from the kernel of destiny we must take with us. Those forces which crowd around us in the disharmonious and discrepant interplay of the animal spiritual world that surrounds us and penetrates into the core of our soul spiritual being. If we want to describe what the human soul experiences between birth and death, what it unites itself with, what it absorbs in its thoughts, feelings, and will impulses. We have to describe the earthly world surrounding us. But if we wish to describe what human beings experience between death and a new birth, we have to describe the archetypes of the things we find on earth. If we want to know what minerals really are, we must hear their being sounding forth from the planets in our life between death and a new birth. If we want to know what plants really are, then on the pathways that rise from the plant kingdom into cosmic space and are copied in the forms and structures of the plants, we must study the nature of what grows out of the soil in the plant as a faint imitation of this. If we want to study the Earth's animal kingdom, we must acquaint ourselves with what is happening in the upheavals and churning of the animal group souls in the moon sphere. And only once we have wrested ourselves away from all that, only once we have entered the sphere beyond the world of stars, do we then learn to recognize the actual mysteries of the human being. And we learn to look back on everything we experienced in the worlds of the mineral, plant, and animal archetypes. We carry this out into the region of the cosmos, in which we not only recognize the mysteries of the human being, but also experience them as a living perception and are active in shaping them. Like a cosmic memory, we bring into this region everything we experienced with regard to the minerals, plants, and animals during our ascent. In the flowing together of these memories and what we gaze on as the mysteries of human existence, what we actively experience, what we actively cooperate on, in the flowing together of this memory and this activity, a rich and varied life is played out. And this many-sided life is what the human being undergoes between death and a new birth. The end of Lecture 1.